I just want to pick apart the Raptors.
That's fine.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Almighty Ballin NBA Show. I'm joined here today by a foremost young Earth creationist. Well, actually, Ben, so are you skeptical of all dinosaurs or just raptors?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm skeptical of this raptors group, but I do think, like, part of the reason why we're so hard on the raptors is because they've been pretty darn good these last couple of years, right? And I think that one of the counters to that success has been, you know, critics maybe who are not located in Toronto or around the team constantly, who are going to say, like, whoa, like, slow down the hype train just a little bit. And I totally understand why Raptors fans would be like on top of the world these last few years. First time they've had a competitive team, first time they've gone to the Eastern Conference Finals, first time they've had a pair of all-stars in the backcourt to really craft an identity that feels like it's going to last for a while. But there was always a sneaking suspicion. I don't know if you felt this too, but there was always that sneaking suspicion this season that they were going to hit a wall, like reality was going to kind of get them. And if that's the asteroid metaphor or whatever you want to, you know, pull back from ancient history, reality was going to finally set in. And I think it did during that second round. And now it's like, how do they pick up the pieces, right?
Yeah, you know, I definitely agree that it's perhaps a question of identity, but before we get whole hog into it, my guest today, Ben Golliver from Sports Illustrated, you can listen to him and then read his NBA content on SI. Is it just SI.com, yeah?
Yeah, SI.com and the Open Floor Podcast. If you just search SI NBA on Apple Podcasts, you should be able to find us.
Yeah, you'll be able to find it. It's great. Subscribe, listen, give it 20 stars, get on four yeah. different applications and give it 5 stars. It's definitely one of my go-tos, but you know, I agree that I think part of it is an identity thing. The problem is though that they went, I think, whole hog into this identity that is based around like a mid-range game. They've got that whole, you know, DeMar DeRozan is basically Michael Jordan from like the mid-90s. They have Valanciunas in the middle. There was a point at which he was untradeable. Of course, that was like 3 or 4 years ago that they thought he was going to be a superstar. And yeah, I mean, now they've hit a wall that I think everyone on the outside looking in felt like was very apparent. Or maybe not everyone, but certainly it sounds like the two of us anyways.
Well, the Valanciunas thing is a really interesting point of entry. Because, like, remember the draft decision, Valanciunas or Tristan Thompson, and like how controversial that was, and like how bad of a move it seemed to prefer Thompson over Valanciunas for multiple years. And now it looks like the most like they just had perfect foresight. So I don't know if they lucked into that or if LeBron's helping Tristan look better. But if you have a big like Tristan who can get by as a rim protector and also cover a lot of ground defensively, and then just be kind of a garbage guy on offense and really hit the offensive boards hard, that is like what we consider to be a great modern center. Like, it's not as good as Draymond, but it's like very, very valuable. And it's not like he's untradeable now, but he is, you know, definitely worth his max contract or, you know, not quite max, but, you know, pretty big contract. And certainly I think would have more market value at this point than a guy like Valanciunas, who for a few years seemed like he was going to be the better player. Right. So, How does Toronto modernize, I think, is the kind of question that you're getting at.
Seems really hard. It seems all their pieces are not, I mean, except for Lowry, who might not be a value contract here pretty soon.
Correct. And I think their whole summer, to me, is going to come in two steps. The first step is to lower expectations. Just bottom line, this team is not as good as they seemed last year. You know, they're not that, like, guaranteed lock them in number two team in the Eastern Conference. So that's the first step. You just got to process that. I know that was really painful during that series against Cleveland, but it's a necessary step. I mean, the roster is going to get so expensive. Even if you brought everybody back and you were willing to pay it, it's still not a true contending roster as we saw this year. And for that reason, it's not wise to pay everybody. You're going to have to make some choices. So the first step is lower expectations. That's fine. Second step is decide, do you want to be competitive? Do you want to be a solid playoff team and keep this thing going? Or is it time to blow it up? And I've seen arguments for both sides. I can actually understand the arguments for both sides. I guess my conclusion would be, if we look at their GM's track record, that's Masai Ujiri, His track record has always put a respectable product on the court. For his 3 years in Denver, they always made the playoffs. They weren't necessarily contenders, but they're always relevant. For 4 years in Toronto, they've always made the playoffs. There was some luck along the way, but this has sort of been the golden era of the Raptors, as we mentioned. For that standpoint, I am inclined to believe he is going to try to put out a respectable product and not blow it up this summer, because that's the track record that we have to go on. It's now 7 years deep. He's forked out a lot of big contracts to guys who were good but not great before. You know, if you're going to pay Nene, you know, you're probably going to want to pay Kyle Lowry too, right? I mean, that's just kind of how it goes. So the question I think is, does Lowry want to sign up for that? Or what is the motivation for Lowry to want to stay if they're only going to be good, if they're going to probably take a step back? And I think obviously the number one reason he would want to stay is money, because they can give him more money than anybody else. They can give him that extra fifth year. I think number two, the motivation is his relationship with DeMar DeRozan. I think the number three would be just the fact that he's kind of the king of his own castle up there. And he's mentioned a desire to win in terms of he wants to compete for a title. But if you look at the real title contenders, whether it's Cleveland, you know, Boston going forward in the future, Washington going forward in the future, and the teams out west, whether it's San Antonio,
maybe
Golden
not the
State,
Rockets.
Houston. Yeah, I mean, whoever you want to throw. Yeah, exactly. Whoever you want to throw into that mix. They all have point guards. They're not going to scrap and blow their teams up for a guy like Kyle Lowry at this point of his career. He's very good. He's a perennial all-star, but he's not Chris Paul. He's not, you know, Russell Westbrook or Steph Curry. So I'm not sure there's going to be a situation out there that's a better winning opportunity for him. So to me, the Raptors summer, if they decide to keep Lowry, if Lowry decides he doesn't have any better options, that is going to be the key decision of the summer and the one that kind of sets their course. Do you think they'll bring him back or no?
Yeah, you know, it sounds like they are planning on it. I think that what the Raptors are going to do is maybe look at the Grizzlies and hope to do something like that. And I think that that's what I would do. I think that you saw Memphis bring in Fizdale, different coach, and they have, you know, they had a similar culture, you know, scoring big man, a lot of mid-range game. You know, they definitely moved the ball better, but they weren't exactly offensive juggernauts, and especially not modernized. Do you feel like there's any chance that DeMar DeRozan at 27 can adapt his game to something like a little bit like what Marc Gasol ended up doing? Basically, can he develop a three-point jump shot? Because, yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely going to bring back Lowry. I just can't. I don't even think they're really well poised to go full Sam Hinkie. So it's like you got to keep trying, but they just need to go in a totally different direction. I feel like they're probably going to move on from their coach. And then, do you feel like anyone can convince DeMar DeRozan that the mid-range assassin thing is a little overrated?
Well, so the Memphis Grizzlies comparison you're making is fascinating because. When you look at their expectations, they've already lowered them, right? The fan base does not expect the Grizzlies to win a title. That's the key first step. Like, they're not overboard, and they're happy if they win 50 games, they make the playoffs, and they push the Spurs. As long as there's a few good moments of grit and grind basketball where the guys are trying hard, you know, they maybe pull a game out at the buzzer like they did this year with Marc Gasol, everybody goes home happy, and it's a good experience, right? I'm not saying the Raptors have to just hope for that, but that is the right mentality to have when you don't have a top 10 guy on your roster at this point, right? And so
and you're not willing to tank in 2-1.
Exactly right. Okay, so then in terms of DeRozan's evolution, I think, you know, I like to play up, you know, his weaknesses as a shooter because it's a very obvious flaw, right? But it's also one that sort of like casual fans can kind of wrap their minds around. There are other flaws to his game. I mean, his defensive attentiveness is awful. When he's off the ball, when he's paying attention, he's not good. What you also saw this in this series was when they either trapped him or put LeBron on him, he didn't have the playmaking, he didn't have the decision making to kind of be a lead force to beat that. To me, that was a big problem. And then, you know, another issue is just he's not a very active help defender. He's not blocking a ton of shots or getting a lot of steals. He's kind of a one-trick pony. And so to me, I don't know how much more he can evolve as a player. I kind of think he is who he is. Hopefully he gets a better jump shot that will make him more effective. But he's just not that good. That's part of the problem. And so,
would you say again, he's about the 45th best player in the NBA?
Yeah, exactly right. So if you have Lowry and DeRozan as your backcourt, that's a solid start. You know, they have a lot of young guys who are cheap under contract you can build around. That can be the core of a team that's a playoff team. You know, you take those two guys over, you know, the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th seeds in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, I'm not sure I see a ton more ceiling, you know, past that. In terms of Dwayne Casey, I think it's time for them to move on. I love Dwayne Casey. I've been a real Dwayne Casey defender for a long time. He gets a lot of criticism. There's no question about it. I'm not sure he had the horses this year in the playoffs to really keep up with Cleveland. I don't know if there was a ton else he could have done. But he rides his players, especially DeRozan and Lowry, huge minutes during the regular season. And he's got to be considered part of the reason why Lowry's had these injury issues down the stretch of multiple seasons. I don't think Lowry's a fragile guy. I don't think he's a wimp at all. I think he's a good competitor and wants to be out there. But he's continually broken down. And when you look at how many minutes he's played and how often the ball is in his hand, it's really not that surprising that those kinds of injuries have happened. So if I am the front office, that would be one potential motivation to try to have a coaching change. And you can maybe even sell Lowry on that. You could be like, look, we're going to bring you back. We're going to give you this huge contract. And we're going to try to play a less demanding style where we get a little bit more help from these other guys. And maybe you'll be around to be healthy in the postseason. I could see that being one way where you could kind of reload this thing or at least shift gears a little bit without blowing it up and keeping your stars happy while also keeping your fan base happy that you've got a team you can cheer for, you know?
Yeah, I think I agree 100% on the Casey thing. I think he deserves all the credit in the world for being the Raptors equivalent of Mark Jackson, sort of, but it really does warrant a Steve Kerr or I guess like the Grizzlies equivalent of Jaeger. It seems like we've sort of talked about this outdated mentality and identity that the Raptors have. And I think that's part of the reason why everyone, especially Raptors fans, are so reticent to go beyond just tinkering with it, like adding an Ibaka here, a PJ Tucker there, and why it's really hard to just push the big red button, because it's like, this is a team. There is like continuity, identity. There's a thing that they do. But it really is time to sort of approach it from a different perspective. And I mean, going back to DeMar DeRozan, I'm inclined to agree with you. If I'm the Raptors, though, you've got to be just hoping that, and like, I realize this is almost an insane ask. You got to hope that DeMar DeRozan can keep his offensive game, except just bring it back 8 feet or like 9 feet, because then you'd have two of the best off the dribble 3-point shooters in the game. And like, that's totally unrealistic, but I mean, maybe like a 1 or 2% chance that something like that could happen. Defensively, I don't see it though. I think he doesn't have the aspiration to be a good defender or the lateral movement. I don't see the defense aspect of it happening.
Oh, for sure. No, like you're saying, I mean, he goes from being like a Nerf gun to an AK-47. If he can shoot off the dribble like that from behind the arc, especially at like the top of the key, I mean, yeah, that'd be an incredible weapon. Part of the problem with me, though, is that I have with him is that he's afraid to shoot it. Is, you know, like, he has shots. He gets open shots. He's afraid to take them, and especially late in games, and that will cost them. I mean, they had a couple possessions this year late where he's dribbling the ball around. He can't get a clean look. All that's available to him is a step back three, and he's just afraid to shoot it because he doesn't trust his shot that much. And I wonder if the ship has already sailed confidence-wise on him. And I also think it was interesting that Casey so pointedly called out his defense during their exit interviews, making a point to say, look, this guy's got to come back as a better defender. Because that has been kind of bubbling, and that's not usually the type of thing you hear from a multiple-time All-Star get called out by his coach for. And so I kind of wonder, is he going to accept that challenge? And can he accept that challenge? Or is this just kind of is who he is? And look, I wrote him off last year. I didn't think he was going to have a better year than he had last year, and he came back and had a much better scoring year. But still, I think he's a regular season player, really not a postseason player at this point. But here's, you know, all these criticisms, there is one that we need to kind of point out on the other side, which is this. He's very popular among the Raptors fan base. He's been there for a long time. He is kind of the franchise guy that people know and love. They sell a lot of his jerseys. He's been good in the community. He's carried them to a lot of wins over the years during the regular season. So for all of those reasons, DeMar probably is worth more to the Raptors than he would be to outside suitors for trades. So, like, if you were really thinking of, like, trying to modernize your team and you just decided, hey, DeRozan's not going to cut it, we got to just trade him, you know, start Norman Powell and go forward. That's kind of my first inclination for how I would run things, maybe not how Masai would run it. The problem is I'm not sure that you're going to be able to get fair value for DeRozan given how big his contract is, how long it goes on for, and then how much he, you know, means to you versus how much he would mean to another team, right? Like, maybe the Lakers would get really excited about him kind of as a homecoming story, face of the franchise. There's not too many other teams who would kind of embrace DeRozan the same way that Toronto has already embraced him. And that does factor into these kinds of trade decisions for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see a DeRozan trade in the cards for the Raptors. That's why, it's always easy to say, well, players have done what we're describing before. Players like Michael Jordan have like developed 3-point jump shots. I mean, that being said, you do have to give it to DeRozan that he's at least a very skilled player. It's just, you know, the skill that he's decided to sort of sink his teeth into is a skill that's not really fit for the modern game. And
the way I've put this before is he's like the very best VHS tape, you know, and everybody else is rocking Blu-ray.
Right. So, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so you don't expect him to all of a sudden be a knockdown shooter, but that's sort of what Lowry did. I mean, he was like, what, the second best off the dribble 3-point shooter during the regular season, or at least the first half of it. And I mean, Lowry was never billed as a sniper, and it's really something that he added to his game after the fact. Now, it's just,
I'm looking at Lowry's numbers right now because it's a good point. He did not come in as a shooter. He first got to league average 3-point shooting on like a reasonable number of attempts when he was 24 in Houston, right? And so he sustained that now for basically 6 or 7 regular seasons. So that is about when you learn how to shoot, if you really put your mind to it. And I think part of the reason why I'm a little bit skeptical on DeRozan really making that kind of progress, one is just the complete lack of trust, which I mentioned earlier. But the second is I remember seeing him as a high school player at the Nike Hoop Summit years and years ago, right? And this guy was the most athletic player on the court. There was no question about it. I mean, he's throwing down dunks on alley-oops that were just out of this world in terms of how far and he was getting off the ground, how bouncy he was. But his shot was broken then. And, you know, he's made a lot of progress in terms of the mid-range, like you've mentioned, really becoming, a guy who can get to pretty much any spot he wants around that area and get his shot off almost against any defender, unless there's two of them. But he hasn't shown the progress at all over the course of his career. I mean, he had one season where he's even averaged 2 threes a game. He's had basically 2 seasons where he's even over 30%. That's not going to cut it. You know, if you're a starting two guard, if you want to be an elite starting two guard, it's just not good enough. And I haven't seen the progress there at all.
So doesn't it make you wonder whether that's a coaching thing? Because, I mean, it might be the case. And, I mean, this would maybe be a good question for Kareem or something like that. But it might be the case that Casey is just not pushing him to shoot threes. I mean, that's sort of the idea about bringing someone in like Fizdale or like Atkinson's like, Brook Lopez, you need to be shooting threes. And then Fizdale's like, you know, Marc Gasol, shoot threes. The thing is, there's like a reason to think that they might be able to do that from beyond the arc that I don't think is there in DeMar DeRozan. But, I mean, it's worth a shot, maybe? I don't know.
Let me say this for Casey, because he's coming from, you know, a stop prior to Toronto where, you know, in Dallas, they're all in on the analytics. Like, he knows the numbers inside and out. I think one reason why you didn't see them play as much through Valanciunas as a lot of people expected was because the post-ups are just not as efficient, and he understands that. I think one reason why you saw him give the total green light to Kyle, especially on, you know, sometimes tough off-the-dribble deep three-pointers, is because he knows that Kyle can do that at an efficient rate. And when you look at their overall team offensive efficiency, during the regular season, at least, and it always changes in the playoffs, but during the regular season, they've had really good offensive efficiencies. And part of the reason why is he's encouraged DeMar to do what he does well, which is the mid-range shots, but then even more importantly, really pound hard and get yourself to the free throw line, because that's the best way to make up for a lack of a jumper, right? So I think Casey would just love to snap his fingers and have DeMar shoot. And if DeMar came back and was a 37% three-point shooter, I think Casey would be telling him bombs away, right? I think this is more of a case where pretty much everyone agreed that he can't do it. And now it's about how can you make the best offense kind of working around that. And I'm not sure if they did change coaches that that approach would really alter that much. You know, I'm not sure a new coach would come in and say, look, DeMar, you've just got to be able to do this because I think he's so hesitant as a shooter and because he knows he can score points other ways. And I think it's kind of a crutch. You know, his mid-range game is kind of a crutch. When he knows he's out there on the wing and he can't hit the shot, he's always just going to think, you know, he's going to go back and trust what works, which is put your head down and drive, try to get a call, or get to one of your spots 15 feet away and knock down the jumper. And those attributes, those skills can actually stand in the way of your growth as a player just because when push comes to shove in a tight game, you go to what you trust you're able to do, not what you're afraid to do.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about skepticism about his game improving, and then this last season, him sort of doubling down on the whole mid-range game and becoming better and sort of hoping that it could translate into the playoffs. And I think that, you know, that's worked for a guy like Isaiah Thomas this offseason. I was interested to see whether or not that was going to happen, where it's like, well, you know, this really can translate to the playoffs. You just have to be so good that it translates to the playoffs. So I guess the question becomes, can he force the issue and finish despite traps, two defenders, or Paul George? Or can he pass out of it? And I mean, that sort of makes me ask, like, so if Patrick Patterson like finds his mojo again and they move Valanciunas for Flotsam and start Ibaka at the center, is that enough spacing that DeMar DeRozan, his next evolution isn't? Oh, I know you don't believe in evolution as a Raptor skeptic, but is his next move sort of, I mean, he's gotten better at passing out of those situations, but not good enough that it would translate to the playoffs yet. Is that in the cards if they really spread the floor, maybe bring in a new coach to say, like, DeMar, you know, we're going to start running this off-ball stuff. We're going to start, you know, if like Steve Kerr was coaching the Raptors and it's like, well, hey, we're going to put Lowry through 15 off-ball picks and we're going to get someone open here, here, and here, and you need to keep your eyes open. Like, is that viable if you have four guys who can shoot around DeMar DeRozan?
Well, I would say the one thing is he looked worse than he is in the playoffs because they didn't have Lowry. So that's going to be your number one option if somebody tries to trap DeMar, is have Lowry make them pay, right? Like, either directly by DeMar finding it to Lowry and allowing Lowry to shoot or attack, or indirectly by DeMar finding the open guy, the ball kicks around, and then Lowry knocks down the open shot, right? Like, not having Lowry in those late games against Cleveland kind of ended the whole thing on a sour note and probably made DeRozan look worse as a lead ball handler, like a lead scoring option, than he actually is. But I don't see a ton of secondary level talent, you know, in term when he's passing. Like, yes, he can drive and kick and find the open guy. I don't think he creates that many extra points with his passes. You know, guys like Draymond, Blake Griffin, you know, LeBron James. I mean, all those guys, I think they get in situations where they can really kind of conjure points up almost out of thin air by their ability to attack and then read how the defense reacts. I'm not sure DeMar's there. Again,
could he get there? Yeah,
it's possible. He can always improve. I mean, like you're saying with Isaiah, there has been improvement there. And it's not always just about the guy who's facing the traps. It's about the other guys responding and knowing what their roles are and when they should step forward and be more aggressive when another team is trying to take out the lead guard, right? And, you know, there's been times in this postseason where Avery Bradley's been like this scoring monster for Boston. Like, that is very unexpected, right? Or you go back a few years. Remember when Jamari Carroll had that crazy scoring run throughout the playoffs for Atlanta because he was like the guy who was being left open? There's different situations where guys who are not known as scorers can step up and really do that. And I think the problem that Toronto had, especially when Lowry was out, was like none of their other guys was really mentally ready or kind of in that mood where they really wanted to, like, you know, kind of be a gung-ho scoring option, really try to put a lot of pressure on the opposing defenses when they were getting ignored. And that's why, you know, they kind of came up a little bit short offensively there. So is it possible? For sure. I think bottom line, you're going to see the best passing from DeRozan when he is paired with another elite guard, because that guy is going to help him beat the traps.
So this is a conversation I've had a few times with Coach Nick particularly. He's talked about, you know, the difference between being an elite scorer and a star versus a guy who isn't one is that, you know, he can do it game in and game out consistently. It's like the guys who you want are, you know, 22 one night, 18 the next night, and then 23 and then 17. That's how you want to average 20 points, as opposed to 25 and then 3 and then 8 and then 40. So could Patrick Patterson do that? Because sometimes I think it's legit that people who say, well, Patrick Patterson's like the third most valuable player on the Raptors. It's like, yeah, on any given month, that might be true, because defensively he, you know, sort of feeds off of his offense. And then on offense, if he's knocking down 45% of his threes, which happens like on any given month, it's just the next month he'll shoot 30% and then get demoralized and not play defense. And then I think his injury made that worse. So, I mean, in a perfect world, do they have a guy like that? A guy who I think they sort of hoped would be, I mean, you were talking about Damarre Carroll. They literally went and signed that guy, hoping that he would be
He was the guy. He was the guy, and it just didn't work out. And you could hear in Masai's end of season press conference that he's like still praying. He's not giving up. You know, like I always kind of joke, like, man, the Raptors need an amnesty clause for Damarre Carroll and they'd be in a lot better spot. I think even if they had an amnesty clause, from what Masai was saying, it didn't sound like he was ready to use it. It was just like he's hoping that the more time from the most recent knee surgery will help Damarre get back to where he was. And that's another situation where if you're the GM, you could look at your coach and say, look, again, stylistically, we can't expect a lot more from Damarre Carroll because of the way that we give the ball to our guards constantly and the way that they do so much stuff one-on-one in isolation. Like, what's Damarre Carroll supposed to do if he's never really in the flow of the offense, if all of his passes are coming like late shot clock or after, you know, a guy's already been pounding it for 10, 15 seconds and you're just asking him to shoot a contested three-pointer? That's not exactly how he found success in Atlanta, right? Like, the success in Atlanta was like all this flow, off-ball movement, getting wide open shots, and being sort of the fifth option. So that is a case where, again, Masai could say, look, that is on Casey. Like, that's a situation where his offense is not helping the supporting guys step up enough. In terms of, like, you know, Patterson and some of their other front court pieces, they've got to make some choices. And I think the first choice is actually not Valanciunas or Patterson. I think the first choice is Ibaka. And yes, he's a new guy. Yes, he's someone they invested some minor assets into at the trade deadline to get him. And probably were thinking when they did that, this is going to be a long-term, you know, this is the third piece, the third big three type of guy who helps them be versatile and downshift the smaller lineups and maybe can start at the four, because that was a huge hole for them all season long, and then kind of get into that smaller lineup. I was surprised to think this, but when I looked at them down the stretch and in the postseason, I almost felt like he was expendable. You know, like he was
Ibaka?
He was almost somebody where he's going to probably be pretty expensive too. And I'm not sure if you're going to pay Lowry, I'm not sure you also pay Ibaka.
Yeah. No, I think that's an interesting question to ask yourself. I think that you definitely don't pay him to play four. So the question, and it seems like Ibaka sort of knows that he should be a center. If you can bring back Serge Ibaka for like 18 a year for 4 years, do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, at that price, probably. But if he gets much more than that, I think hard about it. That decision is also tied then to, like, can you either dump Carroll or Valanciunas? And I think in this scenario, the best case would be dumping Valanciunas, because you've got guys like Poeltl and Nguera who can be your like stand-in starting centers, and then Ibaka is like your starting power forward, but he's really your center, like you're saying. You know, like you start big, and then when you're playing important minutes, you're downshifting Ibaka at the five. I guess my question there would be, that has some real backfire potential. I mean, he could get halfway through that contract and it could look really bad. I mean, probably not like Joakim Noah bad.
But aren't you re-signing Lowry already? Like,
yeah, you are. And I think, I mean, that's the thing, is if you're already re-signing Lowry and there's risk there, and you're probably going to have to trade him halfway through his contract because he's going to show age-related decline, the more of those contracts that you take on with that risk in mind, the trickier it gets to eventually retool, right? Because you've just got too many contracts that you've got to move, and you almost get into a situation like the Blazers right now where it's like, can they get rid of Turner and Crabb and all these other guys, Myers Leonard, all this other money that's on their books, or are they just going to kind of be stuck? And I don't think this team is quite good enough or talented enough to really want to load up on the money. And that's kind of why I wonder, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if you're Toronto, if you pay Lowry, you lower expectations, and then you just don't pay Ibaka and you say, sorry, you didn't play well enough for us. That lets you potentially keep Patterson. That potentially lets you keep Tucker. You run it back with Valanciunas. You have a hole at the four, but you know they've had a hole at the four for like three seasons. I mean, they got Jared Sullinger at one point, thinking he was gonna play for them. I mean, they were starting Luis Scola, which was a real magic act by Dwayne Casey to get kind of quality minutes from him that one season. So they've been used to that. And I think another thing with that power forward hole is, you know, they're potentially in a situation where they should just be going small a lot. And going back to your spacing question, but like, why not just throw out lineups where, you know, you've got your center and you've got your two star guards, you've got Powell and you've got Tucker. And now Tucker is your power forward. I mean, yes, he's going to be overmatched against certain matchups. I mean, he's not going to be able to hold down Kevin Love. But against a lot of teams, I think that squad is pretty interchangeable and it could run a lot of teams off the court offensively, at least during the regular season. So, those are the kinds of things I think they should be thinking about. I mean, I'm not sure it's going to come to that. I don't know how invested they are in Ibaka, and that's kind of why it's a question to me, because I didn't think he played so well during this postseason that he was like a guy you circled and said, you have to resign him. I think it was more of like, well, it's going to depend on what the price is.
Yeah, and I mean, they gave up like a second round pick or a late first and then a iffy three-point shooting small forward. I mean, they didn't give up a whole lot to get him. So I agree.
Exactly.
I don't think that there's that thing where sometimes you trade for the guy who's supposed to be the third part of the big three, and there's a lot of pressure to re-sign him regardless of whether it worked out because you gave up a lot. But I don't think that they're in that position necessarily.
Totally right. I mean, Amasai is unbeholden. Like, the way that they lost, like, he no longer has to look the fan base in the eyes and say, like, yes, I'm going to, sorry, we were too cheap. We couldn't bring these guys back. It's like, no, they got completely blown off the court. Like, he can do whatever the heck he wants. He didn't spend so much money that he's going to have to, like, save face by bringing those guys back. He has a wide open summer. He can make any decision he wants on Lowry, any decision he wants on DeRozan, any decision he wants on Ibaka, any decision he wants on Coach Casey. And everyone will eventually have to come around because of the way they lost. And, you know, again, I think his instinct is going to be to put a competitive team on the court and to pay the most important guy, which is Lowry. But he has a wide range of options this summer, and he's not boxed into really any corners.
Oh, okay. Well, so I definitely want to touch on, we referenced a couple times that there should maybe be a head coaching change. And that's something I want to make sure that we get back to before we wrap this up. But before then, it feels like the other thing that stood out as a consistent theme of something that either needs to bend or break is Valanciunas. I'm gonna give a particular situation because it's something that I've thought about for a long time of a Valanciunas plus Sweeteners for Drummond trade. What do you think about trying to do something like that? Because then you have a guy who you can squint and decide that he's Tristan Thompson, right?
Yeah, that's interesting because like Detroit's kind of in a position where they're feeling a little pressure, right? Like last season did not work. The chemistry with their locker room seemed not great. Maybe that's more on Reggie than Drummond. But Drummond's got some very obvious holes that, you know, could drive a coach crazy. I mean, Stan doesn't even want to play him in playoff games because he can't shoot free throws. You know, like that's rough. And that's kind of one where you could make a panic trade where a guy seemed untouchable 2 years ago. And then you just decide, you know,
Valanciunas seemed untouchable. And he seems like such a good fit for what, I mean, I'm not sure that what Stan Van Gundy's trying to do is the right play, but I mean, he's trying to post up Drummond like six or seven times a game. He's playing him on these high pick and rolls with Reggie, which is great. But then you have the question of, well, he shoots like 12% from the free throw line. Valanciunas shoots like 80%, right?
Oh yeah, he's money, and
he's really got the skilled big offensively, at least, yeah, that SVG wants.
And he's also a guy where a change of scenery is going to make him look better. I think he lost his confidence at times. And I think when you're playing day in, day out with two guards who are really ball dominant, who are scorers, you know, if you miss two shots in a row, it's in your head like, oh, do I put a third one up or are these guys going to get on me one way or the other because I'm not producing, you know? And am I going to continue to get the ball? Those are tough issues. I think ultimately, I mean, he's better than Greg Monroe, but like the kind of success that Greg Monroe had as a second unit lead big where you can actually run some offense through him is like his ideal situation. I'm not sure. I think, unfortunately, like if you're a sixth man big, your trade value is not great, right? Like if people don't even view you necessarily as like a starter, like a go-to scoring starter, you're probably not going to generate that much in return. But I think that's his best role. I wonder, you know, if he went to Detroit, the change of scenery thing I think would be good. But I wonder, you know, if he's going to face just the same defensive problems that he faced, you know, he would face anywhere if he's a starter. And I wonder maybe there's another, either it's a contender or just a team that's trying to win now that could kind of recast Valanciunas as a big minutes, reserve big man, kind of impact guy, sort of like a Cantor or Monroe, where he would really be able to thrive. That might be hard for him to swallow. You know, he's still young. He probably still views himself as like a main guy. But I think when they get into situations where they're against multiple, you know, versatile lineups, you know, downsized, just he just can't cover the ground. He just can't protect the rim well enough. And that's kind of why I see a ceiling like that. But, you know, there's a lot of guys who aren't qualified to be impact starters who do start. So that doesn't mean that.
Like DeMar DeRozan.
that doesn't mean that like he's cast off forever. But I've always been Valanciunas' fan. I mean, I love his old school game and watching him go through like his post work at Summer League. I mean, this dude is a student of his craft. Like he's really got a deep toolbox. But he does seem like he would benefit from a change of scenery. And he is one of those guys where like the outside value of him is probably higher than the internal value just because they've got those young centers behind him. And if they do pay Ibaka, he's almost extraneous.
Yeah, he couldn't be all that much worse in the SVG system than Drummond, though. The problem is, though, I think at least conceptually, SVG's thinking, well, we're going to have a top five defense. Then, you know, it's like, well, can you have a drop back center and not Kawhi? can you play pick and rolls by dropping your center back and not have Kawhi and Danny Green and have that actually work? Because it seems like there's the Spurs who can drop their center and have that good of a defense, but it's because they've got this elite defense on the wing. I don't know, maybe KCP can step it up or something. I that's what I've always imagined because, you know, like, yeah, I think Valanciunas, he's got that whole six-man game center thing, right? But he isn't quite as bad at defense as Cantor, and he's a little bit more clean around the edges. And I could see why 3 years ago you would think to yourself, okay, this is a guy who could start, and that's what you're hoping. If you're going to get starter value from him, you're going to be moving him to an organization that's 3 years behind, like maybe the Chicago Bulls or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're trying to build an elite defense, it's really hard if he's your starting five, period. You know, and that's tough. So we'll see. I mean, I think that they're going to shop him. I would be shocked if they didn't. You know, I mean, it just makes all the sense in the world. I mean, you can say the same thing for both him and Carroll when you're just looking to, like, create a situation where you can have the option to pay both Lowry and Ibaka. One, if not, both of those guys has to go. Otherwise, your cap is just ballooning out of control, right? So, you know, but there could be interest in him. I mean, I think the problem is that so many of the good teams already have their starting centers locked up. It's very similar to the point guard conundrum. So if you're willing to just give him away, then you can move him, I'm sure. But, you know, maybe Toronto, after drafting him, after developing him, after putting all these years of effort into kind of getting him to where he is at this point, are you willing to do that? And that can be really hard. I mean, that's an emotional decision. If you're a guy who's kind of been his boss for, you know, 3 or 4 years now, like Masai has, like, are you really ready to do that? I mean, it's not like he's been so bad he's like played his way out of town. You know what I mean? He's just not as effective as people hoped he was 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's mostly the money thing. I mean, if the Raptors didn't have to pay Kyle Lowry $1 billion and didn't have DeMar Carroll on the books and DeMar DeRozan. There's no reason why you couldn't just hold on to Valanciunas and have him be that sixth man in Toronto, but it just seems like that particular situation, the fact that Poeltl in some ways is already better than Valanciunas, and like, I wouldn't say that he's a better player, but maybe for what the Raptors need, he is. Tell me why I'm completely insane for thinking about George Karl coaching in Toronto. Like, just yell at me.
Well, no, I think it's just a personality thing. I mean, that's an interesting connection because, you know, the Denver thing. Is that where you're going with that, with Masai and George? Or
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. There's a few things there, you know. I mean, they really need someone, I think, who is going to be like Mike D'Antoni or like we talked about, like Steve Kerr versus Mark Jackson, and to a lesser extent, Fizdale for the Miami Heat coming in and, you know, sort of breaking up the Grizzlies' grit and grind rust or whatever. I mean, George Karl will get your team running. He'll get your team, I mean, passing. I mean, but yeah, he's an asshole, so there's that.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Lowry is kind of a personality himself. You know, I mean, he's a little bit of a grouch. He's a hard-headed guy. I mean, like I said, he's a competitor. There's no question about it, but the kind of off again, on again relationship he had with Casey in Toronto has been kind of a thing for years. That feels like an awful lot of like kerosene and matches being thrown together.
That might be good though, right? We're saying maybe blow it up. Like,
that's I just worry that like there could be like a choking incident or something there. You know, like if you have George Karl just kind of going after his superstars after the long track record he's had of throwing guys under the bus, and Lowry, who, you know, a very proud guy, rightfully so, that seems like that could be a trick. But can you find someone who has the same principle as George Karl's offense in terms of pace, ball movement, sharing, not having things bogged down with one superstar? And is there someone who can be in that same mold? I would hope so. And I'm sure there's, you know, a bunch of candidates that they'll look at if they do move on from Casey. But they should make that decision pretty soon, don't you think? I kind of wonder about the timing here. Like, when do you do that if you're the Raptors? Like, probably should be before the draft, right?
Yeah, I would make it before the draft. I would hope that mentally they would make the decision sort of like what Orlando did with their management, but not actually fire like him on the day after they get knocked out, but basically mentally have already made that decision, you know?
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why you want to do it before free agency is so that Lowry knows what's up. You know, like you'd like to have a new coach in place as part of your pitch to Lowry, you know, just like, hey, here's our vision. Here's how we see it helping you. Here's how this change of style is going to make your life easier. Here's the numbers that we expect you to be able to put up. We think you're going to be an all-star again for the next 2-3 seasons. Like, whatever your pitch is, it's easier if you have that coach in place. Like, the last thing I would do is procrastinate on the coaching decision, re-sign Lowry, and then go a different direction afterwards. I mean, that seems like it would get messy.
Yeah. I've got a few interesting names that each sort of have their own thing. Like, George Karl makes sense, like, on a conceptual level. If you had, you know, a way of going in like Men in Black and, you know, pressing that little button and flashing everyone's mind, and everyone forgot that George Karl's a dick, and that, you know, and everyone on the Raptors just like, if there was a way of going in with a clean slate, then that would work. But George Karl has the dirtiest slate ever. So, so the other people who I was thinking, Juwan Howard, because of the same sort of thinking that you had with Fizdale. And then the one that I really like is Becky Hammon.
Oh, wow. Well, you're thinking outside the box. I like that.
I'm nimble.
No, that's big. I mean, look, I have a lot of respect for Becky. Were you at Summer League when she won the title, like her first year out?
Yeah. No, that, I mean, I think, like, Becky Hammon, I say Becky Hammon for last because I think it's the best candidate.
The thing about it is, like, she is already, personality-wise, ready to be a head coach. Like, the way she was handling the media, like, she wasn't, like, Pop Jr. She was just very confident, and, like, if she got a bad question, she's, like, not afraid to blow it off at all. I don't know. I respect her a lot as a coach, and I mean, the Spurs, like what they did to Harden in terms of their defensive game plan and their steadiness. I mean, there's a reason why people have been rating San Antonio for coaches and executives for the last 15, 20 years. I mean, there's a secret sauce down there and everybody wants a little bit of it. I don't know if I have a great idea for who I want to be the Raptors' next coach, but at the same time, like, who predicted Fizdale's success? You know, he was always kind of one of those guys who was on the short list of assistant coaches who'd be in the mix. But I think for his first year, like, could it have gone any better? Like, even just take away his rant, like, take his rant out of the equation, the thing that got him all the attention. That was a pretty successful first season, pretty successful transition. You know, the Stars played great for him, Conley, Gasol. They were able to put themselves in position, maybe if they need to transition away from Zach and Tony Allen, kind of the aging pieces, while also still maintaining a really respectable record and putting up a good showing in the first round. Like, the more and more I'm thinking about it, I kind of like that mold for these Raptors going forward.
Becky Hammon, it's good. It works a lot. It works because I think that maybe Trudeau could step in and say, we need Becky Hammon because we need to put even more pressure on America after electing Trump, you know?
Yeah. Well, if he can save NAFTA with a phone call, I'm sure he can save the Raptors.
I think Becky would be huge.
Great.
But I also like Becky Hammon because if it gets to the point where we're essentially building from the ground up, I like Becky Hammon as the head coach who's doing that. I mean, that summer league squad, like if the Raptors get to a point where it's like, okay, Lowry's 34, Ibaka's 30 something, you know, Valanciunas is the same player he was way back when, we don't have any money, we're just going to be developing guys like Bruno Caboclo, and like, you know, Van Fleet or yeah, guys like that. That would make sense. And plus, you know, they have the 905 or whatever. And man, Becky Hammon, I need to be the manager of the Raptors because that's the call right there.
Well, I love it. Look, bottom line, if they do hire her, you're going to be given like the ultimate Trump card in every discussion about the Raptors for the next 10 years.
Trump, I mean,
if you
call Trump your card? Trump.
Yeah, if you call your shot like that, I mean, that would be impressive. Real quick, though, I want to hear your thoughts. I mean, if you had to guess, stay or go Lowry?
Oh, I think he's staying.
Okay. Stay or go Ibaka?
I think stay, but I agree that it depends on external factors. It depends on whether someone else says, you know, $25 million, because I don't think that there's that market.
Stay or go on Patterson?
I think he'll probably end up going, but it's probably a similar situation as with Ibaka, where... I think he'll end up staying because he probably played himself out of a lot of money.
Stay or go on Tucker?
Stay. Yeah. They'll trade DeMar DeRozan if they have to.
Okay. So then I think that we're looking at a situation where this team really isn't blown up.
Oh, yeah. Well,
save the Raptors from extinction.
Young Earth, man. I just think that Valanciunas is going to get dumped. I think that they're going to look at this roster, see this big contract, that he's imminently replaceable both in skill set and in position. I mean, he's a center who can't play power forward. You know, it's going to be like Valanciunas for like Sean Kilpatrick or something like that.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. I mean, I think they've got probably top five most interesting summer. You can make arguments, all those four guys I just listed, I mean, you can make strong arguments for stay or go both ways. I mean, I think the strongest argument of all of them is that Lowry should stay. But all the other guys, to me, are sort of in the toss-up category. And when all those are pretty important players for you and you're coming off of, you know, back-to-back really strong regular season performances, you know, it's going to look different.
Yeah, I realize I did just say stay on all of those. I think, you know, for the same reason why Dwayne Casey is still like, we can make DeMar Carroll work. I think that that's, I mean, there's always people who are going to spring for a guy who at some point in their career has been called a 3-and-D wing, you know? So I think that DeMar Carroll's movable. And like I said, I think Valanciunas is on the outside looking in. And I think that's how they're going to free up their money. And then it's like, well, can you get any sort of value for Ibaka and Patterson? And then, like, you're basically, I mean, I expect Lowry to come in. I mean, I'm pretty sure you're the master of press conferences, man. I'm pretty sure I saw Dwayne Casey actually say, like, we want to keep Lowry.
Yeah, well, he would be crazy to not say that because that'd be a great way to either get fired or have Lowry not want to come back. So that's good for Casey. But yeah, no, I mean, they should be completely geared around trying to keep him. And I think they've done all the right things in these last 3-4 years in terms of managing his career to be in a very strong place to retain him. And, you know, if his best options are places like Philadelphia, Minnesota, or whoever these other teams might be that actually need a point guard. I mean, if you're Lowry, you feel like you've just built up a winner for the last 3 years. Do you really want to go back and do that again? Like, do you want to feel like you're kind of undoing all this hard work from the last three seasons to start from the ground up with a team that's younger, supporting cast, new faces? I mean, that's a tough ask. And I wouldn't blame him if he looked at those situations and said, okay, you know, you guys represent leverage. You represent, you know, a starting offer. But ultimately, I'm just trying to get as much money as possible from Cy. And I think that's how it's going to play out.
Yeah, or you know, he said that, you know, first things first, he wants to be in a position to win a championship. So I think it's a possibility they could sign for a minimum contract on the Warriors.
Yeah. You might be reading through his comments a little bit on that one, right? And whenever guys say that, it's like, well, I'm proud of you for saying that. Like, your agent prepared you well. Congratulations. We all want to win titles. There's no question about it. But let's see where you are on July 7th, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Ben, this was a lot of fun. It's always great talking to you. I'm glad I got to have you on. Everyone, this was Ben Golliver, Sports Illustrated, SI.com. Check him out. Give him a follow on Twitter. Make sure you listen to him. It's been awesome talking to you about a team that validates what you believe about basketball, I think.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how they come out of the summer. I'm excited. I think a reloaded, retooled Raptors team, they got a lot of young talent. I'm looking forward to, if it's Casey or whoever the next coach is, like, ramping up the minutes for the young guys. Like you're saying, kind of change up the style on offense, you know, maybe make it a little bit more fun. They've been a fun team to follow these last few years, and we'll see where it goes. But thanks for having me, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, definitely.